Nichols and special returning co-host Shea Spillane with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. Dial that into your phone. Be a part of the show. Later tonight, we're going to take a look at what happened down at Hollywood International Airport in Miami last week. Or not Miami, Fort Lauderdale. And those of you who have issues with our gun laws, probably you're not going to like what we have to say. Or at least what some of us have to say. Shay will have things to say that are wild and reactionary.
I get your back, liberals.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what she's here for. But
going against
for
the crazy
rest of you,
gun lady. Yeah. Do you know he calls me that?
He calls you the crazy gun lady?
Yeah.
I mean,
it's out of love, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, no.
Derek, just because
Derek,
I'm going to protect you one day.
Well, I will say that this, as liberal as I may be, this past year in our country has been the first time that I've been like, maybe I'll buy a gun. Like, it's the first time I've ever even considered not the possibility of it, but the practicality of it.
Gotta protect yourself. Okay, now I sound crazy. Oh, all right, I'm just gonna stop.
Girl, get strapped.
But, you know, what did I say back in December, I believe it was, that liberals should do in the event of, you know, some sort of attack happening in the United States? Hide behind a conservative. Because they're probably armed.
We are good for something, Derek.
They're probably armed, and believe it or not, we will save your lives. Well, you wouldn't do the same thing for us, but we will save your lives.
Well, it's funny because that's actually when all my liberal homies were talking about, like, oh, well, let's all rally for the Electoral College to go against the popular vote and you know, end up voting for Hillary Clinton. I was like,
yeah, liberals, sorry, like, those, you know.
Yeah, I was like, you know what, guys, at this point, if that happens, we're going to start a civil war. And the ones that are that aren't on our side are the ones with the guns.
Yeah.
Yeah, liberals, the safe zones and your emojicons with the hugs and everything, those aren't going to protect you.
No, safe spaces. There are no safe spaces once the bullets start flying. I'm sorry.
What are we going to start throwing
granola.
Yeah, what are we going to shield ourselves with a well-worded argument?
Yeah. Yeah, good luck with that. Good luck with that.
Your word prisons do not.
Just as the pen is mightier than the sword, the bullet is mightier than the mouth. We would do well.
I haven't tried yet, but I don't think a piece of paper that I print out with words I've written are going to shield me from a bullet.
So I am sick. I'd like to thank my wife for that. This apparently was part
of... I'm going to get an angry text from your wife.
This is one of my Christmas gifts, apparently,
I'm going to say that's what I've been saying. Because actually, as listeners, you can hear my voice is better than last week.
Yeah.
But I've had to do stand-up this whole past week, and I keep opening with like, yeah, Santa Claus brought me this voice for Christmas. I'm thinking of quitting stand-up comedy to become a phone sex operator.
Nice.
Really, I think it could be very lucrative for me.
I'd pay $1.99 a minute for that.
Well, Derek, though, I mean, like,
It feels cheap.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I was like, you mean a Hamilton sweetie pie? I'm good.
Here's a question: will you urinate on a bed in a hotel room? Is that something that I can pay to have you do?
For all the vodka in Russia.
Yeah, we'll probably get into that in a little bit. In the meantime, Lisa Nichols, what do we got going on locally?
Well, in local news, we learned the fate of former compounding pharmaceutical executive blamed for a deadly meningitis outbreak begins. The trial for a former executive at Massachusetts Compounding Pharmacy blamed for the national meningitis outbreak that killed more than 60 people in 2012 started Wednesday. Barry Caden, who is charged with 25 counts of murder and other offenses under federal racketeering laws, where he was co-founder and head pharmacist of the New England Compounding Center in Framingham. Prosecutors say that the tainted injections sold by the center were the result of poor sanitary standards. More than 750 people in 20 states fell ill and 64 people died. Former pharmacy supervisor Glenn Chin is facing the same charges as Caden, but his trial has been put off until this one is over. Caden has pleaded not guilty to the charges. His trial in the U.S. District Court in Boston is expected to last a couple of months, and jury selection is expected to get underway on Friday. So this guy, Caden, this is a story that we had talked about on the show before the trial's actually finally starting. Again, we're talking about 750 people were affected by this, became ill. 64 people lost their life. Why? Because one man that was a co-founder of a company, the head pharmacist of a company, decided, you know what, I'm not going to follow expiration dates. I'm not going to follow safety standards, anything that Massachusetts state law requires or even under federal law. And put your hands up. It's fine.
Well, I mean, with those numbers, he practically qualifies as a serial killer.
Well, this was 4 years ago that I think that that this happened, correct? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, this is not a recent story. Made national headlines when it happened. You know, there were a couple of things that come up in this. And to me, yeah, you got to throw this guy on trial for doing what he did and failing to follow the standards. At the same time, I think you have to ask the question of why a one-man shop in Massachusetts, he had a few other people working for him, but why a small shop in Massachusetts is producing pharmaceuticals for the entire country.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere there should have been a limit on that, so that even in the event that you've got a complete clown running the operation, the number of people who are going to be killed is somehow minimized.
Don't give them too much power over the population.
But again, you're making it seem like, yes, this is one company that's doing this, but do you know how many pharmaceutical companies there are across the entire country? The need for these kind of products is very much high.
I get that.
So it's not talking about like this one company had a monopoly on so many states.
I get that. But this guy sickened people in 14 states. Okay? 14 states.
Okay, so then we have
They're
questions.
They're pushing out a lot of product.
Then we have questions on many levels. Is there a certain reach that you should have? But I mean, is this one single company producing a specific drug that, you know, you can't get, somebody that's living in Nevada can only get it from this company?
At the time that this story broke, it became clear that they were operating in a gray area of the law. That they
the gray area of the law is that they scrapped by regulations time and time again.
Not even that. The gray area of the law was a compounding pharmacy is supposed to be producing medicine on demand for specific patients. Okay, these guys were a pharmaceutical production company. That's what they were doing. They were doing industrial scale pharmaceutical production. And the Commonwealth of Massachusetts was not doing anything to curtail that.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as you got to sue this guy, I think somebody ought to be suing the Commonwealth of Massachusetts too and saying, hey, where were you guys when this was going on?
Well, and it's a matter of, while obviously this man is very much responsible, it's also a matter of the question of quality control. There's a reason that big companies like that have hundreds of staffers whose whole job is to make sure that something like this doesn't explode. That if there is something going wrong, they catch it right away, they nip it in the bud, and then it's just over with. There's clearly either someone not doing their job or a company that was just ill-staffed to perform properly.
Again, and I mean, this isn't the first story here in the Commonwealth that involves a laboratory and killing people. I mean, you can talk about Annie Dukin and
no, she was just dry labbing and she was a state employee. That's a different
but still, there's regulations that are made to protect consumers. When they are constantly broken or skirt the line of legality, then you have a problem.
Yeah, well, this is where the question of where is the oversight comes in.
I was just going to say, is it a matter of, is this something
are you
the Commonwealth
really
of Massachusetts messed up or something that the company itself
Massachusetts having no oversight?
Yes.
I mean, time and time and again, we say this, regardless if we're talking about pharmaceutical companies or anything. I mean, this is what the state is known for.
So when do the voters stand up and demand more?
And again, how many times have you asked that question on this show? How many times have we questioned the people that we are putting into office? Why are they not doing anything? Why are they not questioning it? Why is there not further investigation in it? Why? What, they just don't care?
Well, I think a problem of it, too, is just, I feel as though we as Americans in general kind of don't really, I don't want to say we don't care if it doesn't affect us, but basically, like, okay, 68 people, that's a huge amount of people. But at the same time, if you're focused on standing up for women's rights, standing up for gun control, standing up for A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Maybe that's not going to be maybe this isn't going to be the thing you write a letter to your congressman about. Maybe it's one of those things that until it affects you, like, I feel like a lot of people,
I absolutely agree with that. People
but
that
it's not top of the priority list of, like,
somebody that's not in their closest of kin or family that isn't affected, whether you're being injured or have some sort of death. You kind of pull blinders to it and say, not that I don't care, but it's not affecting me.
Yeah, exactly.
What, until something affects a majority of people, and what, again, does it until, you know, a mass group of rich white people that it affects? That's when government says, oh, wait a minute.
I would say when it affects Tom Hanks, all of a sudden everyone's going
to
care.
Well, the rich white people have lawyers and access to the media. What you describe, Shay, is an illness that has been common to the American people for decades. And certainly for my entire life, where, you know, somebody gets hit by a bus down the street, everybody freaks out about it. 500 people die in a plane crash overseas, and it's like, well, who cares?
You know, I didn't know that.
Were there any Americans on board? All right, we're not interested. But there's another aspect to this, which is a particular millennial ailment.
Oh, here it comes.
Which is this sort of ingrained belief that that's just the way things are. That nobody does their job right, that the world is screwed up, and that nobody gives a crap. That is not something you find in my generation or in previous generations.
But what you must ask yourself as a result, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but what you must ask yourself with that in mind is why, and I don't consider myself a millennial. I feel like I was like 2 years before
that. We're just on the cusp.
I would say we're like, whoever wants to plop us into whichever category is convenient does. But it's a question of, okay, maybe that's true. But why do we have that outlook? You know, like it's not, we didn't make
Derek,
that up.
I don't think you're lazy.
Political thing that I remember when I was 6 years old was the Monica Lewinsky scandal. That was my first impression of the leadership in our country. And don't get me wrong, I love Billy C. But that was, my first impression was just like, well, I guess everything's infallible. There's nothing that's ever going to be uncorrupt. We didn't just suddenly come up with this in our heads. It's something that people like to think that, again, I don't consider myself a millennial, but people like to say, oh, millennials are lazy. Oh, they just think this because they're lazy or they don't care because they just want to laze around. But it's not. We're not stupid, a stupid generation. We're a generation that's been watching all this stuff our entire lives. And taking from that what we will.
Yeah, Derek, I don't think you can typecast. And generally, I do agree with you on situations when you say it's a millennial. The other day, I was saying, I hate to say, but it's this generation. And I was talking about millennials. And again, like Shay, I am a millennial. I don't.
Ish. We're millennial-ish.
But you can't say millennials are this way and I'm this way in a situation where we're talking about, oh, it's just, this is how things are and the way it's going to be.
I can, and I just did.
What happens, I believe, I think millennials started this, but it has a lot to do with social media and people using social media as a platform to pick and choose what they feel like they care about. And when it becomes viral that we should care about what's going on, you know, as you said, just giving examples, and then every college in the Boston area flees down to Boston Common to protest something that they don't even know anything about. That's happened. But with any generation older than ours, I think it has become a norm just in our society. It's not generational. It's become a norm in our society where this is the way things are. You don't see people speaking out so much.
Oh, I see people.
Well, maybe it's the people that are around you.
I see people my age and older speaking out all the time. Keep in mind.
Maybe it is the people. And again, I have people, myself being one, that speaks out against many things that are going on. Yeah. And I'm a millennial.
Yeah, I worked for MassCan for 3 years and was on a no-fly list. But every time I would fly while I worked for MassCan, they'd print out my boarding pass and it would say SSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSSS quickly search her. And it's funny because about 6 months after I stopped working for Mask Can, all of a sudden it disappeared.
You guys actually did something. So congratulations to you.
Are you
guys
kidding?
Actually achieved something.
I was gonna say, are you kidding? When I was in California listening to the news and hearing that recreational use was legalized here. Yeah. And I just like threw my hands in the air and was like, we did it, guys.
Yeah, we'll see if that ever actually happens.
But in reference to what Lisa was saying, though, it is a lot of it has to do with the amount of information that we're given and how quickly and how large a degree. Because I think a good example of that would be like the Black Lives Matter movement. Your average white millennial is not really going to think about what it's like to be a black person, what it's like to feel threatened by the police, what it's like to walk down the street every day knowing that there are people looking at you and judging you and that you might be in danger, until all of a sudden there's a hashtag.
Society is now based on. It's these buzzwords.
Yeah.
If this story came out today, same thing.
Yeah, you would have hashtag
the same reaction and little reaction as you did 4 years ago. If this same story came out today and had it known that this pharmaceutical company was producing what? Birth control, was producing Narcan, something that is hot and popular, then you would have people on Beacon Hill, maybe trying to do something about it.
Oh, yeah. If we had hashtag killer birth control, do you know how many 25-year-olds would be stomping down Boston
Common? Even worse, what if they made something that killed Harambe? Then we're really in trouble. Then we're really in trouble. But see, this is the problem. Because, and I think you're onto something with this, Lisa, that social media plays a role in this. When everyone is flitting from the cause of the moment to the next cause of the moment, you know what our politicians come to understand? Let it blow over. We can just ignore them. Next week, they're going to be up here complaining about something else. And we can ignore that and wait for that to blow over. That's the state that we're at in this country. And you know what the solution is? Turn off the damn social media.
Well, and I think, again, like Lisa said before, it is, while I do not think you are incorrect, I do think it is unfair to generalize and say all millennials.
It is never unfair to generalize where millennials are concerned. You are a problem.
I just want to smack your glasses off your face right now.
I'm so glad you understand the feeling I get every single week.
I co-hosted the show for 2.5 years. Trust me, I understand.
Yes.
It's a matter of, it would be as easy for me to say, people born in the 70s and 80s don't care about our generation because they're taken care of. It'd be easier for me to say that. It'd be just as easy for me to say that.
That would be true if you said that about the baby boomers. That would be a 100% true statement.
Then if I say that about the baby boomers, but there are plenty of, I work for Lady Parts Justice sometimes, which is a women's reproductive rights organization. Liz Whitstead is a baby boomer, and she fights her butt off for us, for 20-somethings and early 30-somethings, and without regard for the fact that she's taken care of, even if she does nothing. You know, like, you can't generalize, because as much as there are baby boomers who are like, whatever, we're taken care of, and millennials that are like, whatever, there's nothing we can do, there are people from every generation that are still fighting their butts off to make change, help social justice.
You can generalize to the extent that you are accurately capturing the zeitgeist, which I do.
I agree with you and generalize millennials, because again, I bash on my generation.
Yeah, I'm not
so
saying
much.
You're wrong. I'm saying that you're not totally right.
In national news, we're going to spend a little bit of time on this one, kids. BuzzFeed and CNN are under fire today for their handling of an intelligence dossier shared with President Barack Obama and President-elect Donald Trump during Friday's meeting on Russian intervention in the U.S. presidential election. Citing reporting by Carl Bernstein, CNN reported that Trump and Obama had been given a 2-page summary of a 35-page dossier that began its life as opposition research funded by Republican and Democratic campaigners opposed to Trump in the 2016 election. Later on Tuesday, BuzzFeed published the entire dossier, which is unverified, including claims that the Trump Organization and the Kremlin had regular meetings to share intelligence during the election, and that Trump once paid 2 prostitutes to urinate on each other in the presidential suite of the Moscow Ritz-Carlton.
Yeah.
The dossier, allegedly created by a former British MI6 operative with sources in Russia, has already been partly debunked. Claims that Trump attorney Michael Cohen met with Russian officials in Prague, Czechoslovakia in August were disputed by Cohen, who has never been to Prague and can account for his travels during the time in question. Now,
Everybody just realized what the hashtag golden showers says all over their
I saw someone being like, do they mean he likes gold-plated bathroom fixtures?
Yeah, no, so I mean, confused. What you have here is, so the all website.
Right. Best joke I heard today. What's the difference between a chickpea and a garbanzo bean?
What?
President Trump never had a garbanzo bean on his face. Best joke I heard today. And we're going to move on from that because parts of this now.
So funny, Derek.
There is a lot here, okay? And there is more here because since writing this, there have been other aspects of this that have come out. One of the Russian technology experts who allegedly was involved in this communication plan came out late today and said he was never approached by the FBI. No one has ever talked to him. He has no idea why he's in the report. NBC this morning published a report saying that they had spoken to a senior U.S. intelligence official who said Donald Trump never saw the summary and that the documents were not given to Donald Trump. That the other two intelligence officials who spoke to Carl Bernstein had said, we included this stuff. That's all that they said. They never said it was shared with them, simply that it was part of the report. NBC went on to suggest that this information had been put together as a way of illustrating the difference between disinformation and actual intelligence. There's the other aspect of this, which is there are at least 8 high-ranking members of Congress who've seen this. It's floated around every newsroom in the United States for the last 4 or 5 months. And in that time, neither the FBI, the CIA, the New York Times, BuzzFeed, the Washington Post, Mother Jones, Glenn Greenwald, anybody who came in contact with this information has been able to verify a single piece of it.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to one of 3 possibilities. Number one, none of these people are doing their jobs right. Okay? They're all completely incompetent. Number two, nobody really worked that hard to try and verify any of this. They just kind of let it go the other way. Number three, it's all made up. Now, given that we've had 5 months, 2 of the best intelligence agencies on the planet, and 4 of the finest news organizations in the world chasing this thing down, the most logical conclusion is that it is all made up. And we'll go back to the point that this was bought and paid for by Republicans and Democrats campaigning against Donald Trump.
Yeah. I'm going to go with C. You know, and you or any other listeners of the show may not be among the group of Trump supporters, but really what this was, it was shameless, slanderous actions from BuzzFeed that I think are beyond the bounds of what is even remotely acceptable. And it should compel people to be outraged and not go to the side of Donald Trump, but to be outraged against this. We're talking about fake news so much on the show.
Misinformation in general.
You know, and not only Donald Trump, but you have other names that have been mentioned in these papers whose names have been dragged in the mud. And there's literally no evidence in these memos and from BuzzFeed in a single sentence of these documents that is factual or true.
Well, what I will say, obviously, misinformation is a huge problem. Fabricating an entire story, obviously a huge problem. And both of you are absolutely correct that it's unacceptable. That being said, I do find it just the tiniest bit compelling that regardless of if any of this is true, regardless of if somebody literally just like smoked a joint and made it all up and was like, oh, this will be funny, and then it got into the wrong hands and was viewed as true, regardless of if it is actually true, regardless of any of that, I think the sheer fact that it was so easy for Americans to believe it speaks volumes. The sheer fact that we were completely accepting of the man who's going to become our president in a little over a week. Oh yeah, that totally sounds like him. You know, like even if it is untrue, I think that it speaks volumes to the type of impression that Donald Trump gives to us and to the rest of the world that it was so easy until it was so easy to have him be guilty until proven innocent.
I read the whole thing last night, and I could barely contain my laughter at the whole thing about the two prostitutes urinating on
it bears the hallmark of a complete fabrication.
Yeah,
everything from multiple sources in these, you know, sex romps or sex orgies, they can't be confirmed nor refuted. You know, there is extraordinary amount of circumstantial detail that it's clear that the author was generally trying to work around real life situations that are going on. So there was a mention of Russian high up Ivanov, his resignation in August. But then it seems like the author almost contradicted sometimes with the storyline. And it was a really nice fluffed up story.
But in terms of you say, okay, it so clearly sounded like a fabrication. If there was not, think 4 months ago when the whole Access Hollywood thing happened, if there weren't video of him and Billy Bush speaking that way, and it was just somebody writing about that had happened, that would sound like a fabrication. That would sound like an absolutely unbelievable story.
No, not knowing Donald Trump. I could buy that even if you just gave me a transcript.
Well, but that's my point, is that knowing Donald Trump is why this was so easy to believe, why it was so hard for people to even come to terms with that it could become a completely fabricated story. And while it is reprehensible to put out something that you know is false as news, it does speak to the character of our president to be, that we all just blindly believed it.
But very few people blindly believed it.
I'd say is
the problem.
I don't know if that's correct. I'd say a good chunk of people, maybe we're like, this sounds outrageous, but I can see him doing it.
I think a lot of people are having a good laugh about it. But if you know Donald Trump, you know a couple of things. And one of which he repeated in his press conference this morning. Number one, he's a germaphobe. Okay, this is not a guy who wants to be around anybody who's urinating on anybody else. He's running from the room.
Technically, urine is quite sterile, Derek.
Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. That's not the way that someone like him sees it. Number two, if you know Donald Trump, he's not paying women for sex.
Well, I mean, how do you think he got his wife? I'm sorry, you totally said that.
Not in the sense of hiring a prostitute, okay? Yes. They're
called escorts.
There are legendary stories about Donald Trump and the parties that he attended and the things that he was involved in New York City. And Donald Trump is not exchanging money for time with women. Okay.
Or at least not in the classic prostitution sense.
Right. Not in the sense that, I got to call up and get some hookers in here.
Yeah. And this much for the first hour, this much for every additional hour.
Yeah.
And
by the way, if you're a guest in Russia, the Russian government supplies the hookers.
It's like the mint on your pillow. It's just a hooker in your bed.
And by the way, if you're a guest in Russia and Russia is supplying the hookers, you know they're trying to trap you. Okay. Well, Here's a couple of interesting details that people completely overlooked, by the way, that are in this report. One is they talk about how the Russians repeatedly tried to bribe Donald Trump real estate deals. They're like, have some real estate, have some buildings, have this, have that. Every single time he said no. And in this report, it's like, for reasons that we do not understand, Donald Trump turned these offers down. It's because the guy knows what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is one thing. Not the one thing, but obviously this, as a liberal and as a disliker, let's put it that, or disliker's not a word, as not being a fan of our president-to-be, let's put it that way, this has been a really interesting story for me, because like I said, it made me think of like the impressions that we as a country and as a planet have of this man, but also like kind of, as you said, Derek, like kind of starting to think about that even though he's perhaps not the president that I want, he's not an idiot. And
no, he's not.
What really compelled me...
I mean, you don't
get
to the position where you are if
you're a total idiot.
You're an idiot.
But the thing that really struck me today, painful as it was, I did watch his speech speaking about reacting to these allegations. And the thing that really struck me was him saying to his staff when they went to Moscow, guys, I want you on your best behavior, because in these sorts of situations, they have microscopic cameras. They can hide anywhere. And it speaks to his character that he felt the need to say that. But it also speaks to that he like I said, he isn't an idiot. He knows when he's being watched, or at least he did post 2005 or whenever that Access Hollywood video came out. But he knows when he's being watched. And as much as I do think he's someone who's capable of doing perhaps not the whole golden shower thing, capable of doing something equally reprehensible, I do think that that moment that he said that, I was like, I mean, I don't like this dude, but he knows what he's doing. And he is too, he has not, like Lisa just said, he has not come this far by not knowing how to cover his tracks, by not knowing how to behave in what situation.
He is the most media savvy president we have had since Ronald Reagan.
Of course, and it's shocking to the media because they just don't understand. But I mean, come on, you know, the author of the dossier, he was a former British intelligence agent who now claims to run his own, you know, air quote, intelligent gathering network.
Yeah.
He claims to have been provided with all this information from high-ranking Russian officials. And I think the idea is crazy because if anybody's even mildly inept in or familiar with Russian intelligence, they don't do this.
No.
They don't give the information out. But what we do here is look at the big picture and say the big question is whether all these facts, whether they are true or false in this dossier, did it have any regards to what happened with the Russian hacking? Because we have media reports confirming that the dossier was in circulation for, 4 or 5 months or some being dated back until July.
Yeah.
So we're talking about, we know U.S. politicians had it, i.e. Senator Kaine, Hillary Clinton. You have U.S. intelligence agencies having it for months. You also have the media having it. So what you're trying to tell me is that had no reflection on what was being reported or what was being said either by CIA, FBI, or anybody on the Democratic side that was trying to go against Trump in the race.
There were two articles written about it. One of them was in Mother Jones back in October that actually quoted certain things that subsequently showed up in this dossier. Those reports never got any traction. In fact, they got less traction than the fake news story about Donald Trump's server that was communicating with Alpha Bank. There are other problems with this. There's a suggestion in here that the Russian government had all sorts of intelligence on Hillary Clinton that it offered to share with the Trump with Donald Trump that never got shared. That nobody knows what they're going to do with all of these. They apparently intercepted her phone calls and eavesdropped on her conversations. Now, if you know anything about Hillary Clinton and you follow the news about Hillary Clinton, what's the first thing Hillary Clinton did as soon as she entered Russian airspace? Turn off all the phones. She was former State Department. Okay? She would have known. All right? Our tradecraft is bad in intelligence gathering, but it is not that bad. Okay? You disable all of the phones as soon as you enter Russian airspace, because they're immediately on you as soon as you're in there. If she's having conversations and in an enclosed area in Russia, the assumption is that the room is bugged.
Yeah.
And you watch what you say.
Of course.
You just know this.
Yeah. And I mean, it's something we've known about Russia for years.
Yeah.
Since before we were born.
This is what Putin did for a living before he was the president of Russia. Yeah. You know, this is their game. The Russians have done this for decades. This is their game. We know all this. So there's this mysterious Russian intelligence. There are the meetings with Michael Cohen in Prague, which never happened. And people on both sides are saying this never happened. So this is a complete pack of fabrications and lies that accuses the president-elect of the United States of treason. That's what this document does. This document accuses the president-elect of the United States of treason.
And
what does CNN and BuzzFeed do with this?
Here's the thing,
first,
though.
First,
think you need to separate, though, BuzzFeed and CNN.
No. We're not separating anybody out here because they're both guilty. All right?
I think they're guilty, but on two different levels.
Not necessarily. CNN starts out with a well-reported story by Carl Bernstein. And Bernstein, to me, is the one guy that you let off the hook in this. Because Bernstein basically says, everybody in Washington knows that this dossier is floating around. Bernstein finds out that a summary of it has been attached to this intelligence report. And basically gets confirmation of that, goes on CNN and says, look, they attached this dossier that we know about that accuses the Russians of having information that they can use to blackmail Donald Trump. Kompromat, as the Russians like to call it. An hour after that, and CNN sits there and says, oh yeah, they've got all this information about like business dealings and sexual stuff, and it's graphic, but we're not going to tell you what it is because we can't verify it. An hour later, BuzzFeed publishes it. Unless CNN comes out and runs this story, BuzzFeed never publishes the dossier. And then to make matters worse, Don Lemon's sitting on TV last night, not drunk, not getting his ear pierced for a change. Don Lemon's sitting on TV last night and he's saying, well, we didn't publish any of the details about the story, unlike certain other outlets. Wink, wink. Go on your internet and find them. I'm Don Lemon. Wink, wink.
Well, and I think that's... It's interesting that you bring up the idea of treason, of that it accuses him of treason.
That's what it is.
I totally agree with. But I think, again, kind of going back to what I was saying before, it speaks to the way that Americans feel, or at least certain Americans feel about Donald Trump, that, you know, we think of BuzzFeed and CNN as like very reliable news sources.
That's not going to fly on this show.
Let me put that. That was me picking myself up.
Let me put it differently.
BuzzFeed as a reliable news source, I'm sorry, needs to have their head examined.
Let me put it differently.
That is saying Huffington Post is up there. I mean,
let me put it differently.
15 dumb things that millennials say.
Let me put it differently. God, I hate being in a room with two conservatives. You think of them, okay, not being reliable news sources. You think of them as being sources that take themselves seriously enough that they would not put up a story without at least having some semblance of proof.
BuzzFeed is giving you the top 10 things millennials miss if you're born in the 90s. And
I'm more talking about CNN. You're really attacking the wrong point that I'm making.
I'll give Shay the benefit. There are actual journalists involved at BuzzFeed these days.
Yes, and I'm saying in this
realm, they lack ethics and integrity, but they're actual journalists.
In that realm of BuzzFeed, and more, I was more speaking to CNN, but we think of them as being sources that like to at least attempt to back their stuff up. And
CNN, yes.
Okay, I'll take back the BuzzFeed comment and it will make you untwist your panties.
I'll give you both, but CNN certainly holds itself to a higher standard than BuzzFeed.
That's what I'm saying. BuzzFeed, we know, is kind of casual, but when they're talking about something with such an important relevance, as opposed to, like you said, they do stupid listies and stuff.
Yeah, no, but there are journalists that unfortunately get in a situation that you're going to take a job wherever you can, whether it be at Drudge, Huffington Post, BuzzFeed, CNN, you get a job where you can, whether you're a good or bad journalist.
Which means that there are, and that's what I'm saying, is that the people who write for this area of BuzzFeed and for CNN in general typically at least attempt to provide some sort of proof. So the fact that, or at least be able to somewhat back up the stories that they're putting out there. So the fact that they did put out that, and it actually speaks to the fact that CNN just kind of inched at it and kind of nudged, like, you know, kind of.
Well, yeah, here's Don Lemon. We didn't run all the details.
Wink, wink, wink.
Unlike some other outlets. I think that was a perfect choice
in what they did in not talking about that, because they knew there was a 35-page portfolio that was around, and they decided to only do the 2-page abridged version. That what they made it understand that most of your high ups in Washington, that's what they got.
Here's a question. Why are they talking about a confidential intelligence briefing in the first place?
My point being that the fact that even though they had no way to verify it, and even just the sheer fact that CNN did kind of only inch towards it and not actually blow the whole thing up, but still mentioned it, points to the fact of that they wanted it to be true. You know what I mean? Because it's like, okay, oh dear God, if this is true, like, we can impeach him before he even becomes president.
Because it's the narrative. That's the narrative of what they're doing.
I would say it speaks to, and obviously the whole point of the media in a perfect world, or at least in print journalism and things like that, is to be unbiased. It's to just tell us the news. It's to just tell us the facts. And it's unfortunate that we've gotten to a place where, you know, even when I typed in things about what we're going to be talking about later about the shooting in Fort Lauderdale, same thing. You type it in and you look through all these different news channels or all these different news sources, and they're all saying slightly different things that suit their purposes better. Mm-hmm. So what I'm saying is that because CNN with like it shows how much a lot of I don't want to say a lot of, but a good chunk of people like really wanted it to be true was that people who usually cover their butts. I can't say. Can I say the A word on the radio?
Yeah, you can say asses. Yes.
All right. People who usually would cover their asses to the end of the world are suddenly being like, let's just roll the dice on this one and hope it's true.
Yeah, but again, really CNN, the Clinton News Network, this is the narrative that they've been pushing throughout the entire election. This is not anything that was going to change the day after the election and going to be all for the Trump train. And this is what we are going to see, unfortunately, through his entire administration.
But back
nothing
to,
is going to change.
Back to the point that you made earlier, Lisa, where you're trying to give CNN cover on this. They have.
I'm not giving cover. I'm saying
very, very
to
thin
the,
cover on this.
As Shay said, degree of shamefulness.
What BuzzFeed did is unforgivable because BuzzFeed got this
which
dossier.
Which I agree with, absolutely.
And I agree too. I don't want to, I'm not being like, oh my God, I love BuzzFeed, but I'm just, you get the point.
BuzzFeed got this dossier, had their people in Prague try and run down the Michael Cohen story, couldn't do it, couldn't verify
it. Like, screw it, let's put it up anyway.
Published it anyway. Yeah. And then CNN, under this guise, well, we're serious journalists, we have all this salacious information about Donald Trump that we can't share, but other organizations have published it. Wink, wink, nod, nod. I'm Don Lemon.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
Watch me get my ear pierced.
It speaks to the fact that journalists, especially at a place like CNN, where even if you are not a big fan of CNN, I think it's fair to say that they are serious, typically serious journalists, even if liberal.
I don't know that we can say that anymore.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
I don't know that
typically,
we can say that anymore.
For now, it speaks to that they were willing to compromise. And I mean, you can get in serious trouble. That's libel.
That's one of the problems here is that I don't know
slander and libel.
How you are going to avoid a libel lawsuit against BuzzFeed.
Oh, there's going to be so many libel lawsuits against BuzzFeed, against whoever originally, against this. This is just going to be an explosion of libel suits.
This may make the Hulk Hogan sex tape look like a minor blip in the history of journalism by the time it's done.
Oh, God, and enough has happened in journalism since then. I totally forgot about
and
that.
And by the way, all the same people that defended the publication of the Hulk Hogan sex tape are now running around defending BuzzFeed, which tells me that there's an entire generation of people out there working in the news industry who don't get it, who don't understand what the basics of the job are. Because
which is, tell me the facts.
Here's,
and again, back them up.
I say it time and time again. It's so shameful to see a craft that I went to college for, spent so many years studying and have so much respect for, being completely tarnished and it being accepted by the American public, that this is what's being put out.
Here's what this story has done. In their zeal to take down Donald Trump, here's what BuzzFeed and CNN have done. They've created a diplomatic crisis between the United Kingdom and the United States, because one of the details of this story that Bernstein uncovered is that a former British diplomat handed this dossier to John McCain. We don't know how the diplomat, former ambassador, we don't know how he got it. We don't know why he gave it to John McCain. We don't know how any of that happened. We just know that the British were involved. You have a former MI6 agent who created this thing. So now the United Kingdom is scared to death that Trump is going to be like, enough of you guys.
Mm-hmm. See if we help you next world war.
There is a diplomatic incident between the United Kingdom and Russia. Russia has accused Boris Johnson and 10 Downing Street of deliberately fabricating this report to create greater tension between Russia and the United States. So now we have three countries on the eve of a presidential inauguration who, at one point or another in their history, have been allies and have been cooperative, all at each other's throats, so that a couple of liberal yahoos can try and derail the Trump presidency.
Well, and at the end of the day, as a liberal, it was, well, the way I feel about this now, of course, coming out to just be complete fabrication, is the same way I felt about, as a feminist, when people were attacking Steve Martin for what he said about Carrie Fisher when she died, which is, you know, women came up being like, I'm a feminist and you're being anti-feminist. And them doing that actually set the cause back, because it just reinforced the idea that men and a lot of people have about feminism. I feel the same way about this with liberalism and with being against Trump. Whereas here are these people being like, oh, this will really get him. At the end of the day, it's making us look stupid. Yeah. It's making us being taken even less seriously when there are actually people out there fighting the right way and doing things the right way and not trying to whine and just kind of piss and moan their way into getting what they want. Because if history's shown us anything, that's not, it's never going to be what works.
No.
And if anything, much in the case of this situation, it's going to bite you straight in the rear end.
Listen, if what is in this story is true and is found to be true, then Donald Trump should be thrown in jail on charges of treason. Okay, I'll be the first to say that, because what is outlined in this dossier is the equivalent of treason. There is another aspect to this story, which the New York Times late this afternoon finally briefly touched on, which is the fact that FBI Director James Comey had this report in his possession at the time that he released the announcement that he was reopening the investigation into Hillary Clinton's emails. Comey's behavior at that time raised a lot of questions. We sat here one night and tried to figure out what the heck the guy was doing, what the heck he was thinking. Is there a possibility that he knew that this was out there, that he thought somebody might be willing to leak this thing, and that he took a preemptive action?
Exactly what I just said.
And, to try and
it was this paranoid claims that were made in this dossier, shaped or even pushed forward actions by certain people in government, James Comey being one.
James Comey is the most obvious one.
For this and whole Russian hacking scandal, did that affect it?
And this,
I can confidently say yes.
I can't. I don't know. I don't think any of us know until somebody sits James Comey down and asks him questions.
Yeah, like ask like what?
Under oath?
Like what? Like just explain.
I mean, if I'm going to take the crystal ball that you generally look in and it predicts fairly well.
You don't have a knack for that, doesn't he?
Such high tensions and so many fingers being put at James Comey, asking him, why are you not taking actions? We're giving you all of this information. He gets a peek at this dossier and says, wait a minute. Trump, who is going to be the president-elect, is now having relations within Russian intelligence and giving them, yes, of course I need to open this, because why? I'm going to save my butt. And if it was known that I had information and didn't move forward with this. This is what generally people do in Washington. They try to cover their butt.
Yeah.
Oh, by the way, WMFO 90.5-855-915-9636.
You still got it.
But we've been arguing for so long, I was like, no one said that in a while.
That's all right. We only have to do it certain times. But this would also suggest that there is some sort of a greater rift between the CIA and the FBI, if that is the case. So there is an actual real dimension to this story, and it surrounds FBI Director James Comey, and that's really what we ought to be paying attention to going forward. Because that's the only real here that's here. The rest of this is just very bad decision-making, stupidity, hubris. I think the liberals expect that they're going to put this out, Shay, and the Americans are going to rise up, and they're going to demand Donald Trump must go.
Well, they were dumb enough to elect him. Maybe they'd be dumb enough to believe a lie.
Well, it's funny, Derek, because you give a list of all the things, though, that this affects, and you know, foreign relations being one. But a big thing, too, that it affects is a relationship between the now incoming president and intelligence, or U.S. intelligence. When you have people that are day in, day out risking their lives to protect the president, to find out information for government, now you have the president coming out and saying, I don't believe that anything that you're saying is true. All of this information is false. Why would you want to represent that man? And this is what your media is doing.
Well, Trump
this is
also,
what they're creating.
Trump also said in his press conference today that he ran a sting on them to prove that the intelligence community is the one leaking all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, and Derek, I think you're very much right that so much of this, so much of what's being said, and is a lot of things are going to head once someone's going to come to a head, rather, once someone says, I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. And has it go from libel to, like, just straight up, why can't I think of the word right now? when you lie under oath?
Slander.
No, not slander.
Contempt of court.
Contempt of court. Yes. Yeah, like when it goes from being, oh, someone can sue me for this, to, oh, I could go to federal prison over this. Like, that's when all of a sudden it's going to be, well, you know, actually, that's when we're suddenly going to understand, watch this thing unravel and understand.
Yeah, get to the bottom. Unless we're talking about people like Nick Denton and AJ Delario, who just sit there and say, oh, yeah, we publish sex tapes with kids. You know, it's, do not underestimate how sick,
how terrible people can
how
be.
Sick and inhuman.
That's perjury. You thank you. Oh my God, I was sitting there being like, it begins with a P. That's not puberty.
How sick and inhuman the people involved in this stuff are. All right, we got more news in world.
Puberty stinks too, but perjury's worse.
North Korea has enough plutonium to build 10 nuclear bombs, according to sources in South Korea.
Oh, great.
Defense ministers in Seoul believe the North has 110 pounds of weapons-grade plutonium, an increase of nearly 12 pounds since the South's last assessment in 2009. North Korean President Kim Jong-un announced last week that his country was close to testing a nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missile. But outside observers do not believe North Korea has the ability to miniaturize a nuclear warhead to use it with long-range missiles. Now, it's important to note, doesn't sound like 12 pounds of plutonium
this
is a lot.
This in everyday news in North Korea.
Between,
I'm really upset we don't have our reporter from, we have a personal reporter from North Korea that likes to visit us once in a while.
Oh,
she's great. Maybe Derek can find her.
I'll see if there's any. But between 2007 and 2013, North Korea actually shut down the reactor that they used to make the weapons-grade plutonium. Mm. So
it seems like every month there's being new revelations being revealed in Kim Jong-un. He basically gets on top of his missile, pounds on his chest a little bit, his baby chest, and yells what he has for missiles. So 1 month we're talking about they have long-range missiles. The next month we're talking... Oh. Is she here?
No. Just keep going.
And, you know, the month after that, we're talking about they're doing new ways to launch it further, and it could completely destroy the eastern seaboard.
Well, and that's
of the United States. But they've never, and correct me if I'm wrong, they've never successfully tested an ICBM. Is that right?
Well, they have, but not anything capable of reaching the United States of America.
Yes.
That's Kim Jong-un's big goal. I want a nuclear weapon that can hit the United States with nuclear warheads on it. It's, well, like, you're not getting there anytime soon.
Well, and I feel like this is just something we've been going through in North Korea forever. And it calls to mind, I believe it was, I want to say FDR, that said, speak softly but carry a big stick. And also something that my father always tells me, which I can't think of the Latin. Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I know I forget it. I'll get a tattoo to myself. How's that? But it's a law term which basically says the things speak for themselves is the translation, which means that...
Res ipsa loquitur.
Thank you. God. Dad, see, Derek knows it. Maybe he'll teach me how to remember it. But I feel like with North Korea, so those two phrases are always what comes to my mind, because if you are actually capable of doing this, if you do actually have these weapons, if this is actually a thing, why are you telling, like, you wouldn't be telling everybody about it. You'd just be chilling out, waiting quietly for your moment to go, like, boom.
Yeah, but they know that the moment they go boom, we're going to drop a bomb on them, and that's the end of Pyongyang.
But that's what I'm saying. Is it's just him being like, it's like when a dude speaks to the size of his manhood and then never, you know, shows you his manhood.
Yeah.
It's okay, well, all right, so it's that big, show me.
Like, no, it's cage rattling, and so many times he, and we've said it before on the show, at what point does he keeps poking the bear in the United States and saying, hey, look what I got. United States is standing here and saying, we are going to put a stop to any ballistic missile that you put out. Nothing is going to happen. I don't believe that he is actually, bless you, he's actually going to shoot anything off because of the ramifications that would come with it. So we're not even talking about just the United States and the attack that would happen back.
We're just
talking about China. We're talking about everybody that is in the Southeast Asia area that would be going against North Korea.
Well, and so often it feels... like, especially when it comes to the nuclear arms race and threats of attack and things like that, so often it feels like we're just in elementary school and every country is a 10-year-old on the schoolyard talking this big old talk, but no one's going to actually ever throw a fist.
It's pretty much
knock
what it
on
is.
Wood. That wasn't a challenge, North Korea, by the way.
But that's pretty much what it is.
So everyone be like, oh, I'm tough. No, I'm tough. No, I'm tough. Yeah, show me how tough you are. No, no, I got to get home and eat my apple slices.
Yeah,
like,
North Korea is ultimately about the tension between the Kim Jong-un government and the military. And who's going to run that country?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the military thinks Kim Jong-un is vulnerable, they will take over. And if they take over, suddenly we don't know who's in charge over there anymore.
Yeah.
So it is to the benefit of the world at large to sort of let Kim Jong-un keep doing what he's doing.
Well, that's the thing is, it's like, oh, words. Yeah. Talk your big talk, dude. Like, make your country think you're awesome. Go for it.
Up to the point where they actually fire a missile at somebody.
Yeah.
And then you got to start dropping the bombs on them.
Yeah.
And the generals in North Korea know this is what would happen. They know that it's suicide because you could drop nuclear weapons on North Korea and you don't have to worry about that radiation affecting much of anything. It's going to go out into a part of the sea where nobody really is.
Yeah, that China already screwed up anyway.
As long as the wind isn't blowing toward the mainland of China. All right? We'd think twice about bombing if the wind's blowing west to east. But if it's blowing, or if the wind's blowing east to west. Yeah, but if it's blowing west to east, we're sending some bombers over.
I would say the Pacific Ocean is a very big place.
That's assuming that China doesn't get there first. So, you know. But here's what the North Koreans have to say. She's very excitable.
Yeah, she's saying it, sister.
She's very excitable.
CNN needs to get on her page.
Sir, quiet. Mr. President-elect, go ahead. You say
she's asking a question.
Mr. President-elect, can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
You're attacking us. Can you give us a question?
Don't be rude.
Can you give us a question?
I'm not going to give you a question.
Can you stay categorical?
You are fake news.
Sir.
There's our president responding to our North Korean friends. So, President-elect the Donald.
Well, in food news, we learned racist comments lead to an owner costing him his business. A Dairy Queen owner's alleged racial slur to a customer has led to his Illinois store closing and his franchise rights being terminated. Dion Area Ford, 21, charged that James Crichton, owner of the Dairy Queen restaurant in Zion, Illinois, yelled the N-word at her when she demanded her money back for an incomplete order. According to the police report, Ford went inside the store after a mixed-up food order was handed to her through the drive-thru. She says she first asked for the owner to correct the order, but when he refused, she asked for a refund. Ford got her Ford $5 back, but it came with a racial slur. Quote, he took out his flip phone and he said he would take a picture and put it on Facebook because he wants to show the world what kind of N he has to deal with. He then shut the window and walked away, Ford said. After posting a status on Facebook with the number and address of this location, Ford began spearheading a protest against the establishment. The incident prompted protesters to gather outside the Dairy Queen over the weekend. The Dairy Queen released a statement which they labeled the owner's actions, quote, inexcusable, reprehensible, and unacceptable. So first you have the owner. He does apologize. He comes out in a statement. Dairy Queen backs him up and says he's going to go through sensitivity training. And you know, he won't be racist anymore.
But yeah, because that fixes racism.
Yeah, then a few days later, and I'm sure after many, many tweets and Facebook messages and letters sent to Dairy Queen, American Dairy Queen Corporation said that they were completely closing his location and terminating his franchise rights. So a couple of bad words to somebody. It shows you, one, the power of what social media can do, but also you are incredibly inept to live as a proper human being, and you should have this taken away from you.
Well, I think it also speaks to just the thought process of
WMFO Medford. I have to say that.
The thought process of corporations in America, whereas, like, the fact that originally they were like, all right, dude, we back you up after that happened, like, it shouldn't take people protesting.